Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens. PR is a fascinating world when you go back to the early days of how analog it was to generate content.
I tell you what, talking to Fiona, it made me realize that, or just made me think, we are so used to like Google and all that stuff. Before then, it would have taken so much to research, such a harder job. You know, when she talked about not having a mobile phone and having to go to a phone box, I mean, that's like old school.
There's real learnings in there for how to communicate with patients, accepting that not everybody really wants to be interviewed or on camera. So if you're looking to generate patient testimonials, you need to tread carefully. That kind of tenacity.
And resilience. You have to ask. If you don't ask, you don't get it. I think that's
to get yourself in the media. And I genuinely think, the Magic Dentist as a campaign, which she talks about, I will put a link in the
And everybody should get involved with that, really, because it is it's a community thing, but dental health, and especially for children. Amazing.
It was a really good episode. A great episode. Hello. How you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. How's you doing?
Very good. Before we start, want to share something. So FeedSpot put out
I've seen this.
A list of the most popular podcasts.
I should have a T-shirt on. I'm ready.
And get this. Out of the UK dental podcast, Dentology ranked number one traffic, social media following, and freshness.
Freshness.
Imagine being ranked number one for freshness.
Oh, lovely. Nothing like a bit of freshness.
Absolutely superb.
I can smell that freshness from here, Andy.
So we hope more people listen, and we hope more people subscribe, because that would be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah,
anyway,
number one.
Today's episode, we're very fortunate. We're joined by Fiona Dwyer. And Fiona is a PR consultant and coach, but in a former life was also an ITV journalist and senior reporter.
Excellent.
Which is going to be fascinating.
Excellent. I must admit, when I first saw her, I did sort of vaguely think, I might have recognised you from something.
Let's find out more about you. Welcome, Fiona. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you, and congratulations on being number one. I hope you've written a press release or at least got it out on all your social media already.
We're very good at blowing our own trumpet on this.
Excellent. Well done.
So to start with, you've had an extraordinary career, which we're going to kind of get to. But before we get to that, quite often there's clues to who we become from our childhood. So is there a time you can look back on your childhood and say, that's why I'm the person I am today?
Wow, that's a hard one. I don't know. Nobody in my family does what I do. I'm the youngest of seven children.
Seven? One of seven? Yes. Wow.
Yeah, and we're all sort of born in 8 years. We're Irish Catholics, so my parents met over here, actually.
Eight years?
They were both Irish, and they came over here. They met over here as well. And so we were all born in England, though. In the West Midlands. We were brought up in Walsall in the West Midlands.
Oh, yeah.
And so we support Walsall Football Club, by the way. Right. just putting it out there. So my dad was a doctor, my mum was a nurse. My siblings, I'm the youngest, my siblings were either went into sort of nursing or accountancy. It was more sort of project management. I'm the only one who went into journalism. So I'm not quite sure where that came from. I just always wanted to read the news. I sort of would see people reading. I used to see people, BBC Midlands Today it was, I used to see them reading the news, and I sort of thought, I could do that. And I thought, how do I get to do that? And it's by being a journalist. So I thought, right, I want to be a journalist. So that's kind of how I went about it.
But bizarrely,
just a very funny story, which I probably shouldn't tell you, but there is a photo.
Keep going.
There is a photograph of me when I was literally tiny tot, sitting on the potty reading the newspaper. It was meant to be.
Brilliant. That's what I was going to ask. Was my children, my daughters especially, when they were younger, we had so many dance performances and stuff. And I was thinking, were you that sort of little girl who would sit there and just pretend to read the news? You'd get a little paper with a, you know, little desk with some papers, knock them down and do stuff like that. But by the sounds of things, possibly because you were reading the newspaper already when you were
I just read the newspaper, but I don't even know if I knew what I was reading at the time. But I was there is literally a picture of me reading the newspaper, and I can only have been, 18 months or two? Wow. I don't know what it was. So that's quite
upside
amazing.
Down.
No, it was the right way up.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Look at that.
So you've had a decent spell of time in the media industry. How did you get into it?
I was going to say, when did you start?
And what was it like back then? Because, you know, now people see media very much in a digital frame, whereas with you it would have been very analog. So, yeah, how did you get into that and what did it look like back then?
Well, I went – they didn't do journalism degrees when I went – when I did my degree. So I started my degree in 1987 and I went to Trinity and All Saints in Leeds, which is now called Trinity – University, but at that time it was college. It was in the time of unis, polys and colleges. Right. But I chose that degree because it was a joint honours. It was, well, I started it, I did a year of French and public media, then I swapped to English and public media. But in the public media side, there was an option to do, there was a journalism option, as well as a marketing option, a public relations option, and what have you. And that was mm-hmm. the closest I could get to doing something in journalism. But the great thing about the course was that every year you had to do 6 weeks work experience. Oh, and I thought that was brilliant because that meant I would have to work in the media somewhere and it would go on my CV. Mm. So I had it sort of planned out in my head that this is what I was going to do and I would get, you know, work experience so that I'd have all this, you know, I'd get contacts and what have you in the media so that I could progress. And so my first bylines actually were from my work experience was on the newspaper back at home, the Walsall Advertiser. It was the weekly free newspaper.
Right,
and
yeah.
So that was my, so that was the byline. So by Fiona Dwyer, if for anyone who doesn't know what a byline.
I was going to ask you what a byline meant. And that, oh, yes, I see, right.
Literally,
okay.
It just means that you've got a by with your name after it.
Oh, cool.
So they were my first bylines, which was amazing. And that was also my first celebrity interview. And it was with Brenda Blethyn, who was the actress,
yes.
who was playing at Wolverhampton Grand Theatre. And but I never actually met her. It was a phone interview.
Oh.
So, but she was so lovely. And I was thinking, oh, my God, she thinks I'm a real journalist. And I wasn't. I was being a journalist. I wasn't qualified at
She
that
was
time.
Probably on the other end of the phone call going, I bet she thinks I'm a real actor. Everybody has
it. I've a piece and I've got a byline, so I was absolutely over the moon. And I was like, I've interviewed Brenda Blethyn. So that was really
cool.
Did
you keep that original one? Have you got like the original one?
I've got a file. Yes.
Yeah, brilliant. That's great.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So no, that's good. But then my next one was I worked at BBC Radio Leeds, so in programme. So that was my first radio experience as well. And my first time going down to do a Vox Pop into Leeds, I had to walk down into Leeds city centre. And in those days, it was called a Ewer machine. And it was literally your tape. So you recorded on tape because then you'd have to splice and
stick
the tape together when you were doing it. It wasn't just in and out edit. It was actual tape. So you'd carry it on your shoulder. It was like a big, like heavy bag thing. And you'd go with your microphone and you'd have to stop people in the street and ask them a question to do a Vox Pop. So I can't remember what the Vox Pop was about now. But I thought I was terrified because I thought, no one's going to want to talk to me. How do I actually stop somebody in the shopping centre and say, I'm working for it? Well, and I just did. And I just assumed confidence. And I just thought, they all think that I have this confidence because I'm working on the radio and they won't think anything of it if I just interrupt them walking down the street and say, excuse me, you know,
yeah.
I'm from Radio Leeds. Can you just, you know, tell me about XYZ? So that was how I got my work.
And did most people say yes on that experience or were there some people said no, really?
What he does in general for Vox Pops. It's
They just keep walking.
No, I've got to get back to work.
But interestingly, Fiona, I wonder whether today with the advent of social media and people endlessly taking pictures and reels and stories and filming themselves, if you went out today into a busy shopping street with a microphone, I think it would be quite different. I think people would be way keener to engage.
Not really.
Really?
Depending on, yes. I mean, I only left ITV because I worked at ITV Yorkshire. So what would have been Yorkshire Television. Mm. I only left completely 2.5, nearly 3 years ago. And so when we were doing Vox Pops then, People would still walk past you. They'd be rushing past. They didn't want to be really? On television. They'd rather die than be on television. They
would. I thought it would have changed.
People are still people, aren't they? I suppose.
Yeah. And no, they just didn't want to. They didn't want to say anything, or some people would stop and then they'd say, "Well, what are you wanting to talk about?" And then they'd start. They'd be having a chat, and then they said, "Can we record this? You know, because you have to ask permission if they're going to be on camera." And then they say, "Oh no, I don't want to be on telly." And I'm like, "Going, well, why have you been?"
Having a conversation with me, yeah.
I'm on a deadline. Come on.
It's a great sales, though, isn't it? I mean, it's the classic sales. You have to keep going, asking. Otherwise, if you'd have been knocked down after the first five, you'd have gone back and probably never done it again.
Yeah, sometimes.
It's a brilliant lesson to just resilience, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think sometimes you just have to. Sometimes you're really lucky and you get the people that you need straight away. Mm. Because you go out with the idea, right, I need this number of people to say something. And you want to get opposing views, because you don't want, unless everybody, if it's a question, everyone is overwhelmingly in favour or against or whatever. But you want to try and get a whole mixture of views so that you get, so that your report is balanced.
It'd be great to know what the first one was, isn't it? If you could remember what it was.
I know, can't remember.
Well, I suppose you just don't think about it. Yeah. No. You must have done so many, I suppose. They sort of like, I think it's an interesting one when someone shoves a microphone in your face.
Oh, yeah. And isn't an industry. I recently watched The Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon on Apple TV. It's brutal. It looks like a brutal industry. Is that kind of what it's like? Is it as harsh and as brutal as that?
Or is it depicted? Like Anchorman?
Yes.
Or Drop the Dead Donkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was good.
It can be, but you have to be on the ball. You have to be we were quite lucky where we were, because we were all sort of like a sort of family, really, at Calendar News, where I worked. And we all looked out for each other. But yes, we all wanted to, you know, it was great if you had the top story. But you need to sort of help and support each other along the way. It can be brutal. It can be, you have to accept that if somebody's on deadline, you can't interrupt someone. You have to have quite a thick skin, in the sense that if you need some information, or if somebody comes to you, because I'm a really polite person, and if I'm on deadline and I'm writing something and I haven't got, or I'm editing and I haven't got time, I've got 5 minutes to go. Or 10 minutes to go, and someone's trying to talk to you, you're kind of like, you know, I can't talk to you, go away. Do you know what I mean? And you have to literally be, can't talk to you. So you might seem rude, but you're not really being rude, and everybody understands.
It's an interesting one. I can't remember, who was the guest that we had who had that phone person of the in the Trade Towers or something, the Twin Trade Towers? Oh, was that an interview I was watching? And someone was saying, you know, it was the first time they were interviewing someone, and then they just happened to have this phone number of this person who'd been in the bombing, and then they just kept ringing him. And they said that it was really awkward in the fact, but they said somehow you sort of, a bit like you're saying on the rudeness, they just sort of blocked out any of that personal stuff because they just had a story that they wanted to get and get delivered and out. It's fascinating, fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, and over the years, you've got to interview some quite remarkable people, haven't you? Dame Judi Dench, John Hurt, and others.
Yeah, I mean, really brilliant, actually. They were, they came to our region because they were getting honorary degrees. It's a hard word to say, honorary degrees. They were in my patch, so I was a reporter for this area. So I got to do their interviews. And I think, but the most important thing, I always research them beforehand as well. Mm-hmm. So I had, you know, good stuff to ask them about. And it wasn't just about, but they were so gracious. And when you sort of see them, you sort of think, oh, I hope they're really nice people. And they actually were. And I remember with Dame Judi, she the camera wasn't working or something with the cat. So she just had to wait a little bit. And I was really apologetic. I'm saying, I'm so sorry. Because she had a whole line of people who were going to interview her. So I'm so sorry. We'll get this technical issue sorted. And she was going, don't worry about it. It's absolutely fine. So it was just really nice that she was so nice.
Was that pre-Google days, or were you able to Google research? I'm just thinking you must have been at a time when your researcher was just looking through lots of bits of paper and stuff like that.
Oh, at that time we were Googling, and my goodness, what a difference that makes. Mm. But yes, when I first started, it was you just had to have the information that was sent to you, or you'd be looking, you would have, you know, you'd get researchers to look, or you would... it was just what you knew already. You kind of just had to sort of, you know, find out, or if you had time, which often you don't have time, I guess you would have gone to the library. Usually you'd ring somebody in the library to ask them.
Wow.
And it was also, when I first started, we didn't even have mobile phones in the 90s. Wow. We didn't really have mobile phones. So if you were out on a story, you always had to, wherever you were, you could be, you know, an hour and a half away from base. But whenever you finished, you would always ring the news desk before you left in case a story had, you'd have to find a phone box, you know.
I was going to say, did you have to have like coins or something, bag full of coins?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So you would phone the news desk just to make sure that nothing had happened and no story had broken around you, so that you needed to be diverted before you got back with the story that you were on. Wow. So that was it. I'm really showing my age, but that was really...
But it'd be really interesting for our listeners that, you know, I don't know what our demographic is, but you sort of think they're probably... young, mid-30s maybe. And one, they probably don't remember a world really probably without Google and researching and Wikipedia, even though what it is. And definitely, probably will never, ever have used a phone box. It makes you think, do you remember those telephone directories?
Oh, they used to fold out. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's like a whole different world, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you found a phone box and it wasn't working, you had to find another phone box.
Yeah.
Until you want, you know, one that hadn't been vandalised or something. So, but also, if you had time to research, if you knew there was a story coming up that you were going to do, or it was a particular issue that you were researching, you'd go to the library and you'd go through the microfiches. You'd literally go through and scan all the old newspaper articles and things like that.
We used to have those in the bank and in the library, I seem to remember.
Yeah. I think it's incredible where we are now in terms of research tools that are available to us. It's become so much quicker.
Okay.
I think the only challenge with it is that now you can't necessarily directly trust a source. Because back in the day when you were researching against published documents, you hoped there was kind of a process that went through to get published. So there was a degree of kind of, you know, truth with it.
As opposed to Wikipedia.
I mean, people Google things and they get what they believe is a fact or the truth. But there isn't really any filter of what gets uploaded. So whilst in one hand it's easier to get information, it still needs to be cross-checked and validated somehow.
Very much so. You have to double-check it against the source. And, you know, it's good to sort of get, you know, three sources saying the same thing and then you know that, you know, for sure that it's happened. Or if there's like a statistic saying 78% of people do such and such, and, you know, where's that actually come from? And you have to go back to the actual study so that you can actually study
people.
Yourself.
Yeah.
So between us on this podcast, who was your best interview?
Between you two?
Yeah. No, not us. On your best interview ever. Yeah, choose, make a decision.
that'll make a really awkward next 30 minutes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you say Chris and I'm sitting there like...
Yeah, sod off. what's your best interview?
My favourite interview...
Favourite, how about that? Yeah, go.
My favourite interview was actually, I think, with John Hurt. I've interviewed lots of people, but when I think about it, just because he was so lovely. Do you know John Hurt?
Mm.
So he did amazing stuff through his career. But because I'd researched it, I'd gone back to his some of his early stuff. I can't, now that I'm talking to you, I can't remember the name of the film.
He was Elephant Man, wasn't he?
Yes.
No, he did one before that, and he portrayed a gay man in it. And I went back to that and I was asking what that was sort of like in those times. Mm. But all the way up to the present day, at that time, when he played Mr. Ollivander in Harry Potter.
Yes.
And he only took that role because his grandchildren said, "You've got to be in Harry Potter."
that was very sweet.
Yeah, so I sort of went, and It was really good because he, I think he enjoyed looking at the past as well as, you know, looking at the, and just, it was kind of amusing to him to, I think, that he'd gone into Harry Potter as Mr. Ollivander because his grandchildren,
John
his
Hurt
grandchildren
was alien, would
have spoken to him again if he hadn't played the role.
Oh, he's an amazing actor. Absolutely. Yeah. He's done so much stuff.
But again, such a nice man. And I think you find the real greats of really lovely.
Yes, which is nice to hear.
Are some a little bit grumpy? You don't have to mention any names.
Some people can be grumpy, but often it's, I don't know, sometimes it's people on the way up and they sometimes think, I think
really,
they,
it's ideas above their station forms a better choice.
Yes. But, you know, one or two, but in general, people are very nice and very happy to be interviewed because it's good for them at the end
of
the
day.
Yeah, it's good PR,
absolutely,
isn't it?
We've established that to be a good journalist, you need to be good at research. You also need to be tenacious to make sure that you get your interviews. Are there any other kind of general guiding principles that you learned through your journalism career that are just good life lessons for people that kind of has set you up well for your future career because of the things you learn as a result of your work?
Yeah. Don't drink too much coffee.
Yes.
Yeah, make a good cup of tea. I'm good at making tea, though, because I used to make a lot of tea in my house. A lot of people.
I was going to say, with so many siblings,
Yes. But I think you have to be tenacious. You have to, but also you have to be a decent person, I think. I've always been polite. I've always been nice to people because I always think that if you're nice to people at all times, everybody's a human being and everyone deserves respect. So I've always been nice to people. So even when I was being tenacious and follow up, I would do it in a polite way. So, you know, even in on sort of big stories, very difficult stories, you know, when, you know, it's trying to speak to people when family members had died in tragic circumstances, for instance, there's just a way of doing that and an empathy that you have towards them so that you let them, it's all about asking the question and letting people speak, not interrupting them and allowing them to tell their story. And if they pause, letting them pause. If they're obviously needing a prompt, then you carry on, but allowing them to tell their story without you interrupting.
But I was going to say, I think that's a really good point for dentists to hear as well. Because I think quite often, and this happens a lot in the world over, people kind of jump in with what they think is a solution a little bit early. And I think particularly with patients, when they're talking about their situation and perhaps what bothers them or issues they've had in the past or a future event that might be coming up that might be influencing why they're wanting treatment, like a wedding or a big birthday or something like that. And I think you're right. I think staying quiet and getting people to tell their whole story, and quite often the real gold comes quite late on when they're talking because the things come out that aren't obvious. And if you just stay quiet, it creates a space for them to talk.
Yeah, and I think also before you even start an interview, before you even press record, just allowing them to relax. So just having a chat with them, telling them what's going to be happening so that they're not, you know, because they'll be
freaking
worried about
out,
it. Just, you know, having a cup of tea, having a, you know, just having it. If you've got the time to do that, then that's what you've got to do. But you do learn to do that quite well.
Were there some stories that you found really hard in the fact of, because you've almost got to put a, I would imagine in some very emotional stories, you sort of almost got to put a mask on to, was there some stories that you just thought, well, actually, these are really awful stories and it's really hard work for you rather than just asking questions to not sort of get caught up in the emotion, really?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, usually when it involved tragic death. So stories, I remember interviewing, and it was set up. They had agreed to do the story because some people ask, why on earth are you interviewing them? How awful for the family. But I remember interviewing a father and he had two little girls and they'd been in an accident. And his wife, the mother of the girls, and his two little boys had died. So their family had been split in two.
Wow.
And so that was a very difficult interview. And I don't know how they did it, let alone how he did it, let alone, but he wanted to get the message out, you know, and he wanted to talk about them. And sometimes people find it quite comforting to talk to about
it. So cathartic. Sort of cathartic almost,
Yeah, very much so. Also, I remember One I found quite difficult. It was after I'd had my my first child. I've got two children that I've had myself. I've also got a stepdaughter who's older. Right. But my first child was I'd gone back to work after 6 months, and my very first day, he was only 6 months old, so he'd literally just gone into nursery, and my first job, first day back, was had to go to Hull Crown Court to cover a trial about a baby who had been stabbed by their older brother, sort of, who was like a sort of 11-ish, something like that. And all the pictures, you saw all the pictures that were being shown to the jury, and you sort of, and every time they were talking about it, I was thinking, because this baby was six months old, the baby survived.
Right.
You know, so the baby was alive. Mm. Thankfully, I don't know how. But all I could think of, every time I was thinking, oh, gosh, that's my son. Do you know what I mean? Wow. That's what I was thinking.
That emotional connection.
and it was the first day back, and it was, I had to do this package all about it. It was the first day of the trial, and then I was doing a live at lunchtime, it was the lead at tea time, and I was doing live outside court, and it was kind of like, welcome back, Fiona.
Welcome back.
Maternity leave, welcome back.
No soft landing.
Baptism of fire.
Yeah, I think they things like that were the most difficult I found.
And now you provide PR services to your clients, which is effectively free marketing. That's how I see PR.
Yeah,
When talking about PR, is there a certain personality type or client that it works better for? Is it, because I guess you're talking about kind of, you know, helping the clients get better known. Is that not easy for some of your clients?
It's not, and also, well, for several reasons, I think. Sometimes people just don't feel uncomfortable putting themselves out there.
Mm.
They worry what people will say. They worry people will sort of think they're a bit uppity. You know, who do they think they are, trying to get themselves all this press in the media?
Yeah.
Some people don't know how to work out what story is, to identify a story.
Right.
What would be interesting to a journalist? A lot of people, when I start talking to clients right at the very beginning, they start telling me things, and I'm saying, oh, that would make a really good story. And that really, I think, you know, I'm like, yeah, that would be a story, and that would be a story. And things that they say, they think they would like me to do as a story, they're not stories at all that would be interesting from a news point of view. So I just have to say to them, no, that's not interesting.
That's an interesting point.
If we turn it around this way, or if we add statistics to it, or if we add a case study to it, then we can make it into a story. So it's just knowing how to do that.
When you say people come to you and they think they've got a story, effectively, are they just trying to promote their product or service? And it's kind of like an advert. They're not really adding any value to the reader or the listener.
Exactly that. Right. They don't think about who they're actually targeting. So it's really important to know who you're targeting, so who your audience is.
Mm.
And who your audience is, but also if you want to attract a particular journalist or a particular publication or radio program or broadcast TV news, then you have to know the types of story that they do and that they write. And you have to understand who their readers, listeners, viewers are. Because if it doesn't speak to them, then they're not going to be interested because they're in the business of selling newspapers or getting more viewers or looking more.
That's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because then I hadn't realised that almost it's a bit like so we have a finance company, right? Sort of, there is a sort of oblique link here, but they know which banks will lend for certain things and have a preference for things and a dislike for things. And that is that what you're sort of saying, that there'll be some publications and the art is actually knowing who to go to, because this for them is something they'd be interested in. Whereas if you took it to someone else, they'd go, oh, I'm not interested in that at all.
Yeah, no, very much so.
Wow.
So you need to target the right people. So for dentists, for instance, they would be looking at, you know, health reporters. Or they might be. It might be looking at social affairs reporters if it was talking about, you know, the state of oral health. Or, you know, it depends on what the story is. It depends on what the story is as to which journalist you would approach any given place.
And also, I guess it depends whether you're generating the PR, as in providing the content and the material into media, or you're responding. because many years ago, I was fortunate to do some media training with a guy from Channel 4 back in like the mid, late 90s. And he always said that if somebody picks up the phone or wants to talk to you, you have to take the call, because if you say no, they'll go to somebody else. And in dentistry, there's a couple of guys who do this really well. So Kunal Patel, who owns a group, Love Teeth, and Nilesh Palmer, they're both great. And recently there was an acid attack in London, and Kunal got himself all over the radio because he basically just gave some advice on what to do if there's an acid attack or an alkaline attack, and explained the difference. But it's because he was available and he was able to move so quickly that he got all the coverage. And so does it kind of split out, does it still split out into two ways of responding to the media, but also pushing content their way as well?
Yeah, it has to be both. But definitely, if somebody calls you, be available, because they will go elsewhere, but they won't necessarily come back to you again.
Yeah.
So you want to be the go-to person. So you want them to come back to you because you've got, you're media friendly and that you've got interesting stuff to say and that you're knowledgeable and that you're an expert in your particular area.
So do you have a little black book?
Do I have a black book?
Yeah.
I have a contacts book.
Of your little contacts that go, right, actually, this is someone I
contacts
know.
Contacts books are gold dust for
journalists. I say it must be invaluable.
Yes. So you add to it all the time.
Yeah.
So, so yes, so you have a, you have, although now it seems it's all transferred into your contacts on your phone. But yes,
we have a little black phone.
but contacts books were absolute gold dust because they were all the people that you have ever interviewed or you might want to interview. So you could go back to them.
So have you kept a catalogue then of everything you've done since you started?
If you in your contacts book, if you've spoken to somebody, then if it was from a particular organisation, they would be under in your contacts book under a particular sector. So if another environmental story came up, for instance, or another health story came up, you would see who have I spoken to before, who could give a broad a broad look at it, a sort of an expert viewpoint on this.
It's another important sort of business thing, isn't it? The fact of keeping that data, because you never know when it's going to be useful.
When you want to go back.
Yeah, very much so.
You were saying, Fiona, about people coming up with like ideas that aren't newsworthy. Have you got some tips for things that are newsworthy? Is there people out there saying, well, I'm not entirely sure what I would have as a dental practice that might be newsy? What are the sort of things that the media might pick up on?
Or some really bad ideas.
Yeah.
Well, a really bad idea would be to say I've got a 10% off on or 20% off on something, because that's clearly an advert. And so they're not going to be interested in anything that is remotely an advert. If you are trying to push something, then you have to try and find the news angle so that is almost a secondary thing, so that it's just happening. But certainly, if you're looking at what stories, and not every story works for every media. So if you are looking at you can look at if you're the first or the best in something, if you've won an award, if you have what's happening in your practice at the moment, have you got a new service? But when you're looking at a news story, how is that service going to improve the lives of your patients?
Yeah.
So how is that going to happen? What is the latest, if there are some latest guidelines or latest statistics out, then how is that, you use that and sort of comment on it, make a comment on it. So that would be a way of writing, you'd write a press release and then you would send that to your local media. If your local radio station has a talk-in or a phone-in show, then you could offer yourself as an expert in talking about, how people should, the right ways of cleaning your teeth, whether you should use dental floss, the NHS versus private, which is better, is one better, the different ways that you can, get, if there's a dentist plan or something. You can talk about things like that. For a phone in and get people to say, I've got this problem with my tooth and I don't know what to do with it and I can't get an NHS appointment. So you could, there are different things that you can do, and every practice will be different. And I think sort of like the new CQC guidelines, for instance, for dental practices, well, for all health, the health industry, the health sector, they're very patient-centric now. And so they really need to look at all their communications right across the board. So they need to look at how they are dealing with, how they are talking to their patients. Is it by email? Is it by newsletter? Is it on social media? But if you can get yourself in the media, that is talking to your whole community. It's how you're also educating your community, the CQC want to see. Mm. So by getting yourself, finding a story that you can get in the media, and you're the expert, you are the dentist that is putting that forward, you're going to get that organic.
Yeah, I know practices that do very well in terms of generation of new patients. And like you say, if you're seen in that capacity and you've got good Google reviews and it's meeting the requirements of CQC, suddenly you're just elevating yourself to a nice
building
level.
Bricks, aren't you, to your authority.
Yeah,
but also look at sort of key dates and national months and national weeks, like November, for instance, is oral cancer awareness month. And sort of from mid-May to mid-June is National Smile Month. So look at what case studies that you can get, because journalists love case studies. So if they can talk to the actual person, so if you've got somebody who has had oral cancer, or they've had a relative who has died because of oral cancer, then you know, put that forward, and you know, invite the cameras in and say, this is what we're doing, we're putting on oral cancer screening. You know, get yourself, you know, and so that they can come in, they can talk to you in your dental practice, but at the same time they can talk to someone who has had oral cancer, or they have had a relative who has died, so that they can appeal to people to get screened.
Sure. Yeah. So your segue into dentistry was through Nikki Rowland with the Magic Dentist campaign, which we support through FJ Media. We're the media partner for that project.
Yes.
What was it about that initiative that drew you in, other than Nikki being utterly relentless and not accepting no as an answer? But aside from that,
camped on your doorstep.
Well, I've known Nikki for years, actually, because when I was doing my I met her actually when I first set up my business. Sorry, just backtracking, and then I'll get there.
Okay, go on.
After I had my children, I left at ITV and I set up my PR business. So and then they asked me back. So I was being a sort of planning producer for about a year, freelance, and I was still running my business the other couple of days of the week. And then it was too much because I was commuting to Leeds. I live over in East Yorkshire.
Right.
And then they asked me back again as to be the reporter over here again in sort of like Hull, East Yorkshire area. And so I came back 2 days a week, and then the other 3 days I would do my business. So while I was doing all of that, I first met Nikki at a networking for my business, event at my business, and we just hit it off. And so when I was at Calendar, I knew that she was when she was a practice manager. And so if I needed a dentist, I would ring Nikki.
Oh, right.
To go there.
She was in your little black book.
I'd interviewed Nikki previously and filmed at her dental practice. So then we became friends. So, and we actually did a piece for a dentist magazine for a year. I was giving her advice that she needed to follow from a PR point of view, and she would implement it in her practice. So we would do like a monthly call.
Okay.
So then when she set up the Magic Dentist campaign, we were just sort of chatting, and she just said, would you help? And I said, yes, of course. So that's just it wasn't difficult at all, because I thought it was such an amazing campaign. And who doesn't want to see, you know, children have better oral health? Mm. Because what shocked me, though, were the statistics. So the fact that the number that one reason for children to actually have a general anaesthetic is because of, you know, teeth extractions.
Scary,
and that
isn't
just
it?
Shocked me. Yes. Mm.
Yeah.
And that shocked me. And I'm a journalist. And I thought, why didn't I already know this?
It's a terrible stat. Absolutely terrible stat. Could you just explain what the Magic Dentist is and what it's doing in terms of kind of helping with that education?
Okay. Yeah. So the Magic Dentist campaign, as you say, is set up by Nikki. It started because she wrote an amazing children's book, and her daughter Izzy illustrated it, all about the Magic Dentist. And it's in rhyme. So it's very like Dr. Seuss. So if you've read Dr. Seuss, you will know exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
And she uses all the different, it goes through with children going to the dentist and the Magic Dentist. There's like a little, the tooth, if you turn it up, it's like the bunny, and there's a tooth fairy. And it's, the idea is to show children the importance of cleaning your teeth and how to clean your teeth, because there are brushing instructions as well. But also just that it's not scary. Don't be scared of going to the dentist. And, and you know, this is really important. So, and they sort of go on adventures. So it's a really amazing book. So that then transferred into the campaign. And so Nikki goes into school. She has an actual magician who is a dentist. A dentist who is a member of the magic circle is the magic dentist. And so they go into schools with a dental practice, and they have these amazing workshops with primary school children, teaching them how to, and one of the dental nurses is the tooth fairy, and they go into schools and they teach them all about oral health. They just have, and they just do magic tricks and everything. But they also go into dental practices who put on fun days to do the same kind of event. And it's that that she's trying to spread the word about, and she's spreading that, you know, getting more schools and more dental practices involved, and it's getting the word out.
It's a great campaign. It really is.
It's an amazing campaign, and we've had some really great PR for it. And so she's been on the local news up here, but she's also been on BBC Breakfast News with a, because we had, when I'm talking about putting a story together, we actually got them to come into film at a school so that they could speak to the children, speak to the teachers, speak to the dentist, speak to Nikki, and have the pictures there to actually tell the story. And so, and who doesn't love, you know, lots of children, you know, doing something exciting.
We can put the link in, can't we?
That's been amazing, really. Yeah. She's been on lots of radio stations. So she's had some amazing, and we just come, you know, chipping away gradually.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris was just saying we'll add the link to the website in the episode notes so that people
please
can click
do
and
it's
find
fantastic.
Out a bit more about
in case
it.
Our listeners want to get involved.
Yeah, exactly.
If, they, well, if anybody does, that would be amazing. Get in touch with Nikki, because if you can, if you have a local school that you want to go into, then you can actually use it for your own press. You know, get yourself in the media that way.
I was just thinking, but we're talking about PR today, and people are always struggling to find interesting things to talk about in their local community. Yeah. If you hosted an event in your practice with the magic dentist, that's a great
it's
way
good
of making,
PR.
It is,
making
and we've
rain
helped,
the local news.
And we've actually done that. So I've written, I've done press releases and got people on the on their local radio, depending on where it happened to be, whether it was in London, whether it was in Scotland, where, you know, so it's, so it is doable, completely doable, and people are interested, because use the statistics that I was saying, get the statistics and the up-to-date statistics about children's oral health, and that makes it into a story because you're talking about your local community, how you are helping
brilliant.
Them. So that's really. Oh, and the other thing, she's putting educational packs together so that she can actually almost do the magic dentist workshop in a box, so that she'll be able to send it so a school can put it on themselves and invite a dentist in, or the dentist, the dental practice themselves can actually go in with it, so that all the information is there and the magician will go into.
Wow.
Brilliant. That's good.
Fiona, if you could just take one thing from your career and your business life, what's the one thing you think is the most important part in terms of being in business?
Networking. Probably be well. Be a decent person for a start, so people can trust you. That's really important. But also talking to people, networking is very important, because if people don't know that you're there, then no one's going. It's that support network, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's that support network of other businesses. And when you set up in business yourself, as I did, I'm a journalist. I didn't know anything about setting up a business. And running a business is completely different. So I'm great at what I do. So I say so myself. But I'm really good at what I do. But running a business is a completely different, you know, you need a different toolkit completely.
Definitely.
So having, going, networking with people and saying, this is what I'm doing at the moment, or I've come up against this problem, you can, you know, people are quite happy to tell you, well, try this, try that, or
I
use
think it's
it.
A really good point. We did a previous episode with Dr. Tilly Houston, and she was telling us how, so she's quite actively involved in the BACD, which is a dental group. And she said that she's got 3 jobs as a result of being involved in that organisation. And she said, is that what you just said, that it's her network which has provided her with those opportunities. And they've also provided with friends and people who have recommended courses to her. So I agree. I think networking is really important.
And I think it's networking in person in your local community, but also online now, because we've got, you know, I do quite a bit on LinkedIn. But it's really important to do that. And then you join communities on LinkedIn or just communities on Facebook that you, if you join like a master, I'm in a LinkedIn mastermind, so I have a whole, you know, there are, I don't know, thousands probably of businesses who are in this mastermind with me, and we all share information. And I think if you've got an idea for something, you can put it in there and you can sort of work out whether or not it's going to work or not. So I think that sort of network, like extended network then, people you might not have met, but you know them.
You're part
of it. Trust them because they're online and they're in the same group as you are.
Fiona, we've got to the time where we have two questions that we need to ask you. Given your background and the things you've done, the people you've met, I'm going to be fascinated to hear what the answer to these questions are. So our first question is, you can be a fly on the wall in a situation. Where are you and who's there? What's going on?
Do you know, this has really flummoxed me because I would like to be a fly on the wall in so many different situations. I've written a load down. I'd like to, some of them sort of historical, really, probably. I'd be really interested in Hitler's last moments. What actually happened? Did he actually kill himself, or did he somehow manage to escape? Because there's so much controversy over that. I'd also like to be a fly on the wall to find out how Marilyn Monroe actually died.
A conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, I really love conspiracy theories because I like to try and get to the bottom of things.
nice link.
Yeah.
Are you going to do JFK?
Well, I could have done, but then that would be, fly on the wall in the Oval Office. It depends on which president. I'm not quite sure. Really.
Hoover, wasn't it? Hoover, I suppose, was shot him or something, aren't they?
But I was saying that we're Irish Catholic, so I'd quite like to go right back and go to the Last Supper.
Right.
And see if it is actually as portrayed in Da Vinci's painting, is what actually happened and things like that. But I'd also, two more things, sorry.
We've never had anybody come up with five things.
I'll tell you what, the Last Supper just made me think of Monty Python and that sketch with the Last Supper. But anyway, moving on.
Well, Life of Brian, that's just...
That is the funniest sketch ever.
That is so funny. But I'd like to go into NASA's control room when man walked on the moon, because that was actually in the year I was born as well. I was two months old at that time.
Right. And now, did they? Did they land on the moon?
We've all seen the film with Elliot Gould.
Have you ever watched a film called Wag the Dog? That is just really, you haven't, it's really good.
Yes.
It's all about that sort of thing. But finally, and this is more modern day, I'd quite like to know what King Charles and Prince William really think of what's going on with Harry and Meghan. And conversely, I'd like to be on the fly in the wall in Harry and Meghan's house to find out what the heck they're actually doing.
Yeah, that'd be a very interesting one. Interesting one.
Yes.
Wow. So
super inquisitive. Maybe that's the journalistic mind there. You say that.
Honestly, there are so many more, but I just thought, this is just too difficult.
I've got to stop somewhere.
So our follow-up question is, if you could meet somebody, and given that we were so generous last time, you're going to have to say just one person.
There will be one person. Yes.
So you've got the opportunity. You can sit down. You can have a cup of coffee, tea, beer, wine, whatever you want. Pope. Who would you meet?
No, well, I would love to meet the Pope, but I would say the Queen. I will never be able to do that now. Mm. I've always wanted to have tea with the Queen, but just one tea would not be enough because she has met so many interesting people. I'd like to find out about her and what she really thinks of people, but also all the people that she's met, all the presidents, all the dignitaries, everyone that she's met. And I think she would have been, I think I'd have needed a fortnight with her. Really, to get all the information. But I think she would have just been, and I think she'd have been loads of fun.
I think she would have been. I think
so
she did.
That's who I would love to.
An incredible job. An incredible job. And not an easy one because, lots of people have watched the program The Crown, and I get that's dramatisation. But it brought it home to me just how they are a family in the traditional sense, and they also have a job as the royal family. But they're the same people. And it's not easy to kind of manage that. Going back to your point about, Charles, William and Harry. They are, it's father and sons and siblings.
But they're in the media.
Yeah.
Goes into hospital, boom, front page news.
They also have another role as well. So it's not straightforward. But I agree. I think the Queen would have been a hoot. I think she'd been great fun.
I reckon she'd have been quite naughty. I don't mean like naughty, naughty, but I mean, you know, just like quite a bit
cheeky.
Cheeky, yeah.
I agree. I think it would have been hilarious. I mean, when you think about, you know, she was always like having tea with Paddington and stuff like that. Yes. Jubilee. And I loved when she like jumped out, you know, for the Olympics. Was it Olympics?
Yes.
And then she jumped out and played, you know, with James Bond. Yeah. You know, all of that, I think it would have been amazing.
Brilliant. Fiona, it's been a joy. It's been an absolute joy.
It's been brilliant.
I think your history in terms of the work you've done is great. I think getting involved with Nikki and the Magic Dentist campaign is brilliant.
Great, yeah, brilliant.
And we'll definitely put those links in the episode. But no, we appreciate your time today. It's been wonderful talking.
It's been fascinating. Thank you so much. Different side of stuff.
No,
thank
not
you
at
so
all.
Much.
Not at all. Look after yourself. Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Yes,
y'all.
You too. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.